Pleased to hear you. This system will notify you once you begin your broadcast. The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good afternoon, everyone. Joe Varnador here. Hope everybody is doing well on this lovely Thursday afternoon. I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the temperature is somewhere in the low teens and in the minuses last night. So crazy weather and pretty cold for a Florida boy. So I've got some good stuff to go over today. I do want to remind you that, again, this call is for you guys. So I want to make sure that if you have any questions about anything, let's make sure that we get them asked, and either by raising your hand and I'll recognize you, and or by typing them in. Either way will do. And I'm going to kind of hold on for a second here because I'm in a hotel and I want to make sure that my battery does not die on my laptop. So let me plug this in real quick while I'm talking, and then we can move forward. What that means, guys, is I was doing so much work here in my room that I only have 12% of battery life left. So that means I'm very efficient, I guess. All right, here we go. First question we have, and I'm going to unmute. I'm going to unmute Dave, and I'm going to unmute Bob as well, because I want them to give some feedback on this. And Bob Bullinger. Hey, Dave. Bob, how you doing?
Joe. How you doing?
Very good. We've got some first questions here today on filling out the partial purchase agreement, and I know you guys have some are familiar with that as well because you've both sold some partials. Unfortunately, the person that had sent this in, T from the D.C. area, Baltimore, D.C. area, couldn't be on. So I wanted to go ahead and kind of let's go through this quickly here as we get on. So I have the security agreement opened up here somewhere. So the first question that T has is he just kind of wants some clarification on page one of the partial, RPSA, and that's a receivable purchase and sale agreement. And guys, that is on the website under performing notes on the training part of that. So if you guys want to look that up and kind of go over it or take notes, I'd be happy to do that. So we'll spend just a few minutes going over and kind of going through that. So, Bob, how's the weather in Virginia Beach?
Cold, very cold. We can have snow tomorrow, actually.
Okay. There you go. Dave, how's the weather in...
Quit laughing, Dave.
That's funny.
Yep, there's a lot
You're
of
welcome to it.
Here. I've been here since Monday morning, and when I left Palm Beach Monday morning, it was 37, and when I got here, it was 30. But it only got colder here, and it just got warmer in Florida. So there you go. Go figure, right? Okay, so let's kind of walk through this. And we're not going to go through this entire multi-page agreement. Some of the questions that he had on this were just some things that I'm sure that some of the jargon, some of the terms that a lot of you wouldn't be familiar with. So I think the first part of this is very self-explanatory, who's selling it and who's buying it. The type of security agreement is one of the first questions that T had, and the type of security agreement is either going to be a mortgage and note, it's going to be a deed of trust or trust deed, or it's going to be a land contract slash contract for deed. So you'll know which one of these that is as you look at the documents on the loan. You'll know that if it's a land contract, it'll state that it's a land contract. If it's a mortgage and note, you'll know that it's a mortgage and note. And if it's a deed of trust, you'll know that as well. And then the original payor on the instrument is the original person that is making the payments. Okay. And the original payee on the security agreement is going to be the person receiving the payments. The date of the security agreements, and by the way, guys, let me clarify that a little further. The borrower is the payor, the payee is the person that sold this property and is financing it for the borrower. Okay. The original date, that's going to be the date that the loan, the original security agreement, whether it be a mortgage, a note, deed of trust, or land contract, would be that date on that original documentation. And then the other questions that, that Dave has, and the first one is pretty pretty self-explanatory, and you'll see that right on the agreement, right on the document that's recorded. You'll see the recording date. And Dave, Bob, you and you know the three of us go back a little ways, you know, because we're a little older. So I'm sure both of you remember going to the courthouse years ago, and when you were looking for something, and literally you went into the office, and there were books, and it had the everything was recorded, and it was put inside a book, and that's where you get the book or volume number, book and page number. I remember it being called also the LIBOR and portfolio number, which was Latin for book and page. So you guys don't remember that, do you?
Oh, you're way ahead of us. Not really.
Yeah, I gotcha. So yeah, folks, I saw it go from when I first started in the business, you know, it was basically you went and did courthouse research. You did courthouse research. You went to the courthouse. And some of the counties had the books and you went there. And then I remember when the microfiche came in and you would pull out microfiche and then you would look it up. And then it went on to onto the computer system, but you could only get through it or get to it by going to the courthouse. And then there was finally we could, you know, get to it from the internet and do that kind of stuff. So the recording date, the number, the book and page number, the county that it was recorded in, the state that it was recorded in, and then obviously the lien position. Outstanding balance received, and that is, Exhibit A is on down here, but we're, you know, it's the balance of the loan from depends on how many payments have been made. So if it's 46 have been made, we're going to buy and there's 100 payments still due. So, or let's just make it easy. There's 50 payments been made and there's 50 payments remaining from the 51st payment. In monthly installments of, so whatever the original terms on the note were, what's the monthly payments? And that's going to be principal and interest only. The interest rate on that and when the next installment payment is due, or the date, excuse me, the date that it's due on, and then how much is going into the reserve account for taxes and insurance on a monthly basis. When you're buying loans from Colonial and you're buying some of the institutions, most of all of those are going to have the taxes and insurance will be escrowed. When you're buying from individuals, typically they don't. Dave, have you ever bought one from someone, from an individual that actually escrowed the taxes and insurance?
There was one, but very few of them have that escrow.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as you're more seasoned, guys, and there's a lot of you on today are not as seasoned as some of us, you know, the thing that always that continues to blow my mind is that, you know, they don't require that the taxes and insurance be escrowed, which is just utter, you know, craziness. And a lot of them do not even run the borrower's credit before they sell the property to them and see what their credit looks like. So, hopefully as Dodd-Frank matures, some people will do those things that they need to be doing. So as we scroll down here, and this first area here was just the documents that you need. You know, you want to make sure that anytime you're buying that the seller has the originals. Okay. So we want to go ahead and say, look, do you have the original promissory note or any endorsements, the allonge or endorsements of the promissory note to another purchaser? All of the things, we just want to make sure that the seller has the originals on all of those. And typically we want them to either fax or scan and email us the copies of those documents so that we can check those over prior to actually going to contract. Because there's nothing more frustrating than somebody you're buying a loan from and they've misplaced the original note. Now, you know, that can be fixed. We can, you know, get a lost note affidavit taken care of, but that's just something that adds time on to the transaction. And obviously, if they've asked you how long it's going to take to close the transaction, and you're assuming that everything is the way it should be, and you say 2 weeks or 30 days or whatever it is, and then they've lost the note and we have to go through and get a lost note affidavit and all of those things, then obviously it's going to take more time, which was not your fault. It was the seller's fault up front. So years ago, when I got a mortgage broker's license, I remember taking a little class, for new mortgage brokers. And one of the things that always stuck out that I didn't remember, don't remember anything else, but I do remember that the guy that was teaching the little class there, he always said that you never, ever, ever, and he was speaking on the mortgage brokerage side, tell a client or a potential client that, oh, this is no problem. Yeah, we can get this done very quickly. No problem, no problem, no problem. And when you say something like that, it gives people a false sense of security. And that false sense of security then leads them to a lot of times shopping some of their deals around because they think, well, this is a great loan. And, you know, if this guy says it's a great deal, then, you know, I'm going to shop it to other people when in fact you've just kind of led them down a rosy path, which isn't the truth. So you want to always make them know that there will be some challenges along the way. And there typically is. It's not something you're misleading, but it typically is. So the purchase price on of the loan that we're making. So what are we paying for this loan? And is it to be paid by a third-party closing agent? Or who is it going to be paid by? And who's paying the closing costs? So if you're brokering a note or you're selling a partial, you need to make it clear up front who is paying the cost to close the transaction. Is it going to, are you going to pay as the, if you're selling a partial, you've bought a note as a full and you're going to sell a partial, are you going to pay the closing cost for the transaction or are you going to split the cost with the note buyer, the partial buyer? So just make sure that you get that out of the way there as well. Everything here is pretty generic as we go through and just a lot of verbiage. But the other question that T had, and if any of you have other questions on this as we go through or in future weeks, we can take care of this. But T's other question was, where in this agreement is it is the verbiage on what happens if either the note pays off early, or B, if there is a default. So let's scroll down here and we will look at that default language so that we can understand that. Administration, if you have a servicer, we're going to put the servicer information here. And guys, if you're having trouble hearing me, I can see my meter kind of going crazy here. I'm in a hotel on hotel Wi-Fi, so you're not hearing me, just let me know. Or if you didn't understand something, let me know as well. Hold on. Oh, gosh, I just checked questions, and I see. All right, guys. I'll just kind of do the best I can. Let's see, fading in and out. Let me do this. Let me do this. Bear with me just a second, guys. And Rick, yeah, I'll come back to your question there. Let me see if I can call in on my phone, and we'll still have the audio on here. It's looking better now. Is it? Can you hear me a little better now, guys? Dave, Bob, can you hear me?
I can hear you now fine.
Okay, so I'm just going to kind of watch the meter here, and if I slow down, you'll realize that I can see that the internet here is fading quickly. So let me answer a couple of questions here before we move on. And I apologize for the connection today, guys. It's just I am in a hotel. So Todd says, apparently mistakenly deleted the January spreadsheet from my laptop. I don't see the January tape. Todd, give the trade or email the trade desk, tradedesk@colonialfundinggroup.com, and you can and see if Michelle can't get you that tape again. Let's see, your phone's breaking up. And Terry or Rick is asking, Rick Salinger, could you define allonge or endorsement of promissory note? The allonge and the endorsement is the documents that when you are transferring a loan from one to the other, that allonge is the transfer of that, or the legal documentation that you will have that goes along with that. So the allonge is just the transfer of that document. Let's see. Guys, are you hearing me okay again? Okay, let's see. So glad to hear you say this because I got a headphone set with Mike and thought it was her. Okay. Okay, so everything seems to be better now. So we'll just see. All right, so let me go from there. And let's see. So here's the seller's option to repurchase. And this is in case of default, guys. So I know that many of you, and every time I do a presentation at a real estate investors association and I talk about partials, you know, most people, the first question they ask if they're really paying attention is what happens if the buyer or the borrower defaults during the period that you have sold the partial. So we can look at this, and it just simply says that, let me move something here on my screen, in the event of a default on the receivable, other than set forth above, which continues for a period of 60 days, purchaser at his own expense may proceed with foreclosure, accept a deed in lieu of foreclosure, or initiate legal proceedings against the payor to collect the amounts owing pursuant to the receivable. Seller, upon 15 days written notice of such default issued by purchaser, shall have the option to repurchase the receivable by paying to purchaser the remaining balance of the amount purchased then due purchaser. So here's what that means, guys. So if the borrower defaults and we've sold 60 payments as a partial and we own the remaining 180 payments. So there was 240 payments on this loan that we bought and we sell 60. So the borrower makes 30 payments on time on the partial. And then the borrower defaults. So there's 30, the borrower or the partial purchaser still is owed 30 payments. So the first remedy that we have here, and it's pretty clearly stated here, is that the person that owns the partial can initiate foreclosure. So they can start the process of foreclosure. They can accept a deed in lieu from the borrower. And they can start the proceedings because understand that the entire note has been assigned to that partial purchaser for that period of time. So if I bought the partial, a 60 payment partial, even though there's 240 payments remaining on this loan, the borrower is taking assignment of that entire loan for that period of time. Now, after the 60 months are up, it's going to revert right back to me as the owner of the back end of that. So the borrower, or so the partial person that's purchased, the person that has purchased the partial, they do have the right to start foreclosure. The good thing is that 99% of the people that are buying these partials from us are buying these as passive investments. So they want nothing to do with foreclosing on the property, trying to get a deed in lieu. So then basically it falls back to us. And you can see the last sentence in that paragraph or in that area that says, seller upon 15 days written notice of such default issued by purchaser. So you're, and by the way, when you're having these serviced by a third party vendor or a third party servicer, both of you are going to be in the notice process. So not only will the partial purchaser know that they are not receiving their payments on this, but the servicer is going to let you know as a remainder man or a remainder person that the borrowers are in default as well. So you're fully protected there. So you're going to know as well that that it's been in default, and you shall have the option to repurchase the receivable by paying to the purchaser, your partial purchaser, the remaining balance of their investment. So you've heard us talk about when a partial is sold, and just understand that what you have is when a loan is created, we all know that there's an AM schedule, an amortization schedule that's created. And if it were a 240-month AM schedule, you're going to see what you know each monthly payment looks like. So payment one is $500. X amount of dollars is going to go towards the principal. X amount is interest, and then it'll show you the remaining balance. So if it's $500 and $475 is interest and $25 is principal, to make it real simple, the loan was $100,000. Well, then the new balance is going to be $99,975. So that's the original AM schedule. When you sell a partial, the partial purchaser is getting something called an entitlement schedule. So at any period of time during that 60-month partial that you have sold, the borrower or the partial purchaser can look at their entitlement schedule and know exactly what their balance would be at any time. So at the end of 30 payments, they've paid $20,000 for 60 payments. 30 payments have been received. So they're, I had to wait there for a second. I'm watching the meter here. So their entitlement, if half of those payments have been received, is really not going to be $10,000. It's going to be something less than $10,000. So that entitlement schedule will always show what the partial purchaser's remaining balance would be at any time. And then if it defaulted on payment 31 or 30 or whatever that looks like, then you would be able to write a check and repurchase, making the partial purchaser whole on their investment, and you would write a check to them for whatever that balance would be. Now, if you wanted to try to work something out with them, or maybe you made a payment or two or something like that until you could come up with the money to pay that off, whatever that looks like, but that's the default language, and that's what really confuses most new note buyers, especially with partials there. So I'm going to stop there, and let's see if we have any questions. Let's see. Okay. So we have no questions on that. Dave, Bob, did I do okay? You have anything you want to add to that?
You explained it very clearly.
good.
I just had that very conversation this morning with a potential investor, and I actually had similar conversation earlier this week, and they asked me what would happen, and I said, well, let's face it, I'm in this to the very end with you, and I told them that I basically would end up handling it to help them through it, or I would actually handle it for them.
Right. And you know, that's the, you know, we're dealing with, we're not, when you're selling a partial, we, you know, most people would like to think that, oh, well, this person, the person that you're selling a partial to is a passive investor, okay? They just want to know that they are going to be protected as they go through this situation. So, you know, we just want to make sure that, that they feel very comfortable, and just by explaining it to them, just like that, you know, say, look, you know, my intention is to take care of you on this and buy this back and make you whole on that. But understand that you know, if you couldn't, you could certainly tell them, well, look, you're owed $10,000 on a loan that I'm owed $60,000 on the back end in payment. So I am certainly I certainly want to make sure this doesn't go bad. And if it does, I certainly want to try to buy that back, or I'm going to buy that back from you. But if you couldn't, or something happened, then obviously they could make the foreclosure, take the foreclosure process to the end, and they would have a house that would maybe be worth $80,000 for their $10,000 for their $10,000 investment. So pretty easy to go through. Bob, were you able to quell their fears or any fears they had by explaining that to them?
Yes, I was. Okay. And I explained that they get all their money before I even get one penny.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Dave, you have anything you want to add to that? Dave is self-muting, so that's okay. All right, Sylvia Hofstetter says, who holds the deed, the purchaser or the third party like the servicer attorney? Typically, the best scenario is that the third party, your servicer or an attorney or whatever, hold on, your attorney or the third party servicer would hold that that deed while this is while the partial is out there. The other thing that I want to say too is typically if you're selling and it's your IRA and their IRA, you're doing a $100 model or something like that, that you will the custodian will hold that deed as well. Okay, so that's typically, and that's the best way to do it. Okay, Dave, let me see. Let me go in here and find you again. You're giving me a hard time today. I'm kidding. All right. So, Dave, have you had any challenges with that? I've got you unmuted now.
No, I have not. And also, I include the chart where you show the breakdown of the full, the partial. And if I just give an example, let's just say at month 40, you'd be bought out, or are you? It's redeemed or whatever. I just show it graphically in addition to showing the amortization schedule, just as another tool.
Good. Very good. And that's exactly what we should be doing if we're doing it. Hello, Zarina. How are you today?
Hi, Joe. I'm just popping in on you. Just
that's all right. You just hang out. You just hang out with us. And I'm sure that you being and having your calls with some of the new students, and as we've talked about as we talk about partials, I'm sure that's one of the questions that they have as well.
I'm not sure what the question is. Well, it kind of came in on the
what happens in the case of default if you've sold a partial?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a default question, guys. It's always going to be asked, so you always need an answer for that.
That's right. So we spent some time on that. And, you know, the other side of that, guys, is, and that's what I always say. I say, well, you know, something else could happen as well, is that the loan could pay off early. And, again, if they ask you that question, refer them back to the entitlement schedule, and they can see that at any time, as they receive a monthly payment, they can actually see what the balance of their or what their payoff would be at any given time. So, you know, what I always tell people when we're dealing with something like that is, hey, if it pays off early, I know you want to keep your money invested. I know that is very important to you. It is also very important to me. So what I will do is, if it pays off early, I will have another investment ready for you as soon as you get your money back on that one. So there you go. Let's see. Jason says, would you repeat the scenario for handling the default as it pertains to writing a check? So Jason, sure. Let me go back through that. So we're going to use some round numbers here, and I'll kind of go back and I'll just slow down just a bit. So when you sell a partial, there is the original AM schedule, and then there is the entitlement schedule. So your borrower or your partial purchaser is going to get that entitlement schedule, and it's going to show the 60 payments they're buying if it's a 60-payment partial. So they will be able to look at any time during that 60 months that they've invested their money in this partial, if it paid off or if it were to go into default, what the balance would be of their investment, what they would receive. So what the partial purchase agreement says, it says that you will buy them out of the deal or buy them out. So if you bought a $20,000 partial purchase for 60 payments, the borrower makes 30 of the 60 payments and defaults, then the remainder that the partial purchaser would be owed would be something less than $10,000 per the entitlement schedule. So the purchase agreement says that you will make them whole on that investment. So if it's $9,947 that is still due, then you're going to write them a check for the balance of their investment, and then it's just going to be transferred back to you. So what you have done is you've taken care of your partial purchaser. You've made them whole on their investment. You now have the loan back, or the note back, and then you would either work something out with the borrower or you would initiate the foreclosure process, okay? So either way, they're going to be taken care of on that. Does that make sense, Jason, to you? And by the way, if you were to say, I'm sure that if you're talking with most of the partial purchasers and you just said, look, I can't write a check for it this month, but let me make the payment on it for you this month, and I'll write the check next month, and you start your foreclosure process there. Claudia says, so to be clear, the entitlement reflects the principal and interest on the AM schedule, i.e. the payment less the taxes and insurance, and that's correct. So just like your regular AM schedule, when you AM out a loan, if you have a 240-month loan, it's going to show the 240 payments that are on that loan. So again, you'll see, and it's principal and interest only. It has nothing to do with the taxes and insurance, your AM schedule. So you have a $100,000 loan amortized for 240 months at $800 a month. Then it's going to show payment one, how much was principal, how much was interest, and then what's the balance. And then payment number two, you made an $800 payment, how much of that was principal, how much was interest, and what's the new balance. Same way the entitlement schedule looks. You've purchased 60 payments. You've paid $20,000 for those 60 payments. You receive payment one of $800. Here's how much was that. Here's how much you're still owed at the end of that. So it's the same thing. Hopefully that clears that up. Always get a lot of questions on something like this, Zarina.
Mm-hmm.
Wallace says, let's say you sell a 60-payment partial and it's 200 months total. What happens if the borrower stops paying at month 54 and then it reverts back to me? If I get the borrower to pay again, do I personally owe back the principal and interest to the partial owner? So your partial purchaser has received 54 of the 60 payments. Zarina, I'm in a hotel today, so I'm kind of in and out on my on you being able to hear me. So that's what you hear.
Oh, we can hear you just fine.
Okay, good. Because I'm watching the audience view the meter on here, and sometimes it drops to zero from 100. So, okay. So
that means anyway, they're not paying attention.
Okay. So 54. So they've received 54 payments. They have 6 payments remaining. So if their entitlement or what they're still owed is going to be, you know, it's not going to be that much. So it's not going to be 6 more payments of $800 a month. So it's not going to be $4,800. It's going to be something less than that. So it may be $2,000 is what they're still owed on their purchase. Because what they're purchasing is they're purchasing principal and interest. But mostly interest, because they're front end loaded with interest. So whatever that would be, you've made them whole on their investment. So you wouldn't owe them anything else if you modified this or you got them paying again. You would have just made your investor whole on whatever the balance of their entitlement would be. So hopefully that makes sense. And you know what guys, next week we'll amortize a loan, then we'll look at the entitlement schedule so you can get a good idea of that. So Deborah says, so we would only owe the principal balance without the remaining interest. Well, whatever the entitlement schedule would show is the balance there. So if we've bought 60 payments of $800 a month, and that may be a bad example, but at any given time, you remember that the borrower is buying, or the partial purchaser is buying. He's getting a yield. He's getting a return on his money. So whatever, if there were 6 payments left, the entitlement schedule wouldn't be $400 if it was 6 payments of $800 a month. So it would be something less than that. So what I'll do is I'll just next week on the call, we'll just take one, we'll am it out, and we'll just look at it. We'll use this exact same scenario. Or Zarina, if you have the ability to pull one up real quick, I'm just not that smart. But let's just do it next week, guys, and we'll look at it and make it better. Okay, so let's go to the next question here, and let's see. So what's going on, Zarina? Are you in Ohio or are you in Florida?
I'm back in Florida. I got back on Monday. I was in Ohio for about a week. I was there for a week and then caught bronchitis, so that wasn't a great trip.
Yeah, I remember talking to you last week when you were at Lowe's, I believe. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I had to push through it. I was putting together a studio. So.
It's been cold, cold, cold. Sue's got the next question here. Let me unmute Sue, and we'll go through this with her. Get her unmuted here. Hey, Sue, you need to unmute yourself on your end.
We can hear typing.
Yep, we can. Sue, are you there? That may be Bob or Dave. So,
oh, okay.
Let's go ahead and talk about Sue's question here, and get her an outcome on this. Sue says, I'm a newbie, and this would be my first sale. The potential buyer wants to do her own due diligence. I can send her the basic information from the tape. Sue's question is, when would I send her the other details? Okay, Sue, I see you got your hand raised there. Let me see if I can do it now. Hey, there you go. So, Zarina? Can you see that? You can't see that on the screen. Oh, you can see that. How do I unmute Sue there?
Let me see.
Because what it says on my screen is attendees can't be unmuted until they enter their PIN.
Yeah. They have to enter a PIN. I think it's saying that she wants to use the telephone, and so you have to put a PIN in when you want to use the telephone.
Okay. Any how do they get that pin? Do you know? Should be somewhere.
There should be something where she clicks and it does it.
Yeah. Anybody
Not quite sure.
want to? I don't know. Let me see. Let me see if anybody else has had that experience and they can help us. Let's see. It's in the Claudia says it's in the email. Jason says it's in the email. So
I got it.
it's in
Can
the
you
email.
hear me?
I can hear you
Boom.
loud and clear. Thank God we have.
Hey, how about that?
Awesome.
I went back up and found the PIN number.
Very good. So, Sue, everybody was a newbie once. So, there's always a learning curve. So that's what we're here for, and that's why we want you to answer the question, get the questions answered.
I really appreciate it.
No worries. So tell me what you're working on here, and let's see if we can take care of this.
Okay, my buyer wants to, or my potential buyer wants to do her own due diligence, and I wasn't sure. I know how to present the information that's on the tape, and I know to click the details and everything. I just wasn't sure how much of those details, the docs, that I, the deed and all of that, that I should send her. I was gone around in a wholesale deal, and I guess I have a little fear of that, but I want her also to be comfortable. What would I send her from the click, the click details, all of that
Right.
information?
So here's
What would I send her? All of it?
you're buying this from Colonial, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got all of the documents there in your for the deal. So here's what you need, what she needs to do.
Yes.
You need to go ahead and have her sign a purchase and sale agreement. And it is
Okay.
obviously it's conditional upon her due diligence. So if she wants to do, and I'm assuming you're buying a full and you're selling a partial. Is that right?
We haven't determined all of that yet.
Okay. Certainly you could redact, the information on that. You could take the you could black out the address of the property,
Okay.
the names of the borrowers and the names of the lender. So certainly you could do that, and she would not have the ability to go any further. She could just look at the documents, obviously. Without her having it under contract, or you having it under contract, that's just something that wouldn't be it just wouldn't be something that would be normal. Okay, and that's kind of you do say you did say that you had somebody go around you on a wholesale deal, and that's where this is coming from, and it's something that's a real fear, and you should be careful of it. So if she's a true buyer, she can certainly understand that this is business. It has nothing to do with who she is. It just is business, and she needs to get it under. You need to get it decide how you're going to do this, and if you're going to sell her a partial, and then get it under a conditional agreement, which they all are. I mean, she's still going to have the right to do her own due diligence. For instance, she can order her own BPO. She can do her own title search on this. But again, I wouldn't just give it over to her. The chances of her calling Colonial or getting a hold of this loan would be slim,
It's minimal, yeah.
but you want to start this out in a professional way, and this relationship needs to be started and ran professionally, and that's the way you do it. So
Okay,
I'd be
so
happy to
I
do that.
have her sign a purchase and sale, a conditional purchase and sale agreement,
Right.
and then I can give her the docs and maybe black out the addresses and borrow and lender. And how long does she have to look at that then? Was she within a week
I
or
mean,
what?
I would give her. I would. I, so you can ask her. So what period of time do you need to do this? Obviously, She's. It just it depends on a couple of things. If she's serious about this, and she's going, this is going to be her period of time when she has to do her due diligence. Ask her what that means. Does that mean she's going to
okay.
go order a BPO on it? Does this mean that she's going to go ahead and check title on it, and this is she's going to be ready to close after she does this? Or does she just want to kind of sneak a peek at what the documents look like?
I think that's it, as much as anything.
Okay.
This is the first one she's bought, so consequently, you know, she isn't trusting of the process. She isn't. She doesn't know me that well. There's a lot of ifs in her mind too, and I want her to be comfortable with the whole thing. But I'd like to go forward with it too.
Well, and so. I'm glad to hear you say that she wants to be comfortable with it and she wants to be professional with it. So she shouldn't have any problem at all signing the agreement, signing the contract, mm-hmm. purchase and sale. She shouldn't have a problem with doing that at all. And that may make her feel
okay.
a little better as well.
Okay, fine.
Very good.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Keep us posted on that and let us know how it
okay.
goes. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. I will.
Okay. Bye-bye. Let's see. Lisa, do you have your hand raised that you can actually talk?
I believe I actually can.
Really?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. I mean, every
it's a
time,
miracle.
You know, Zarina, every time I've tried to unmute Lisa before, she's always like, well, I can't talk. I don't have a microphone.
That's because Lisa's a busy woman.
You know what she is. I'm going to see Lisa here in a few weeks.
I know. We're looking forward to seeing you.
Very good. So what's going on today?
I think the number one thing that she needs to do with a person in that situation is get an NDA.
That's true, too. Let's get her back on.
I think that's the first step, do an NDA, because then
yep.
you're covered, and if they go around you, you have that document, and then proceed from there.
Yeah.
You know,
what document did you say that was?
The non-disclosure
agreement.
Yep.
We have it. It's on the website.
Yep.
A what agreement? I'm sorry.
Sue, it's the non-disclosure agreement. You would.
Oh, okay.
You would have signed one of those before Colonial would have sent you the tapes as well.
Yes, and Zarina helped me with that too. So okay. I've got one of those. No problem.
Very good. So that Lisa, you know what? Thank you for bringing that up. That you're exactly right. That is the perfect situation to do. It's a non-disclosure.
Well,
yep.
It's just been my experience, Joe, that if someone doesn't want to sign that,
they're not real.
I don't want to spend any more time with them.
Right.
You know.
Okay. So does that mean that we go ahead?
Oh, especially since you said you had someone go around you in a deal.
Right. So
you know?
Does that mean they don't have to sign the conditional purchase and sale agreement
well,
if they sign the non-disclosure or just go ahead with both of them?
No, you probably want to go ahead with both of them.
Okay.
I would start with the NDA, and I would just explain why you need it, that it's customary business practice because
mm-hmm.
these are sensitive documents.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody balks at signing that, you're going to have problems through your whole deal.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Super.
So Sue, here's the way I would do that. So anybody that is interested in buying and working with you, so before we do anything with them, we're going to have them sign a non-disclosure agreement. Okay? And
okay.
they're going to say, well, why do I need to do that? Well, because we're going to be working together. We're going to be sharing sensitive information about people's lives. So we want to make
mm-hmm.
sure that you're not going to go and anything I share with you, that you're not going to blast it out on the, you know, on the internet or put it on LinkedIn or whatever it is. So that's the first step. Then when you're ready to move to the next step and you're working on a specific deal and you're ready to put it on paper and proceed from there, then we're going to do the purchase and sale agreement from there.
Okay. Okay, good.
Well, Joe, I think the NDA does another thing, too. It actually protects the party signing it because it's dated.
Right.
And then
if
Sue decided, you know, to go off and show another the same asset to someone else, you know, the other person might say, hey, but wait, I was in line first, and you know, it kind of makes people hustle a little bit if they're serious.
Yes. Okay.
It's been my experience. That's all.
Yeah, I think she does need to hustle, and I don't think she understands just how she needs to hustle and why. And I've tried to tell her that, you know, these notes are available to other people, and it might be that somebody would buy it. But do I understand correctly that it's on hold once you get involved with a note like that? Okay. I don't want to hold it up somebody else wants it.
Sue, it's not going to be on hold forever, and we had a conversation internally about this the other day. So if you just for the fact that you've downloaded the documents to look at doesn't mean that that's on hold. That's once you let the trade desk know you want that document, you do have a period of time to do your own due diligence on this. So five to 7 days or 7 to 10 days, then that's how long that's going to be. And if you haven't taken action by that point of time, you need to, if you're not going to do it or you find something that you
let them know.
Yeah. You need to let the office know, and they're going to pull that because they're holding that for you in good faith that you're going to buy that asset. So make sure, that, you know, you, when you're ready to go to agreement with Colonial or the trade desk, that you're going to then move forward. And, you know, the first thing you learn in real estate is time is of the essence. So I want to make sure that you get that done.
Okay, that sounds wonderful.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
Joe, I have another question for you.
Ma'am.
I noticed that at the top of the hour you were talking about the note number 41680. You know, I looked at that note, and that one shows that no payment has been made since May 2015.
Okay, May 2015.
And so now that we're more than 6 months out from that one making a payment, does that belong in the performing note list?
It really should probably be placed over in the sub-performing or the non-performing list. So
okay, I was just curious about that.
It should. When we had a conversation about this last week when we were talking about assets and buying assets and so on with Bob Repass and Eddie and Susan and so on. So I'll make that notation. And
well, the reason I'm asking is because I was looking at that because I've got someone who's looking to buy a partial as well, and I was, you know, that one kind of fell in her price range. And then when I went back and looked at it and looked through the pay history is pretty troubled.
Right.
And I was going to call Charles about it today and talk to him, but I got you.
Okay.
So I'm just curious about that.
It would still be for sale. So, you know,
certainly
go ahead and check with Charles on that as well before it may be a little while before I get it in there. But yeah, just go ahead and check with Charles on it and see what it is, or Angie, either one.
What the story is, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Very good.
Bye, Joe.
All right, Dave, we're going to end up with, and I know you had gotten your question answered on this, Dave, but I wanted to go ahead and do this anyway so that people don't, other students don't go down the wrong path, but because there are some no-nos in the business as far as what we're looking at and how should that and what should we not look at. So, Dave, your question was, I just received a request for a quote. It's a church, not sure where to begin. So I think Bob Repass answered you on this in an email last week, but I did want to bring this up just so everybody else would know. We don't really know. Colonial is not going to buy a note on a church. And I don't know of any institutional investor that would as well. Okay. And here's the reason that a church may not be a great investment as far as buying a note. It could be that in some cases the pastor would be the guarantor of the note, It could be the finance committee of the church that would be guaranteeing the note. So it and it really, really, really would leave a very bad taste in anyone's mouth if you had to foreclose on a church.
Mm-hmm.
Probably wouldn't be good karma, would it, Zarina? So I also made a list down here at the bottom of others that we probably want to stay away from. So churches for a different reason than these others here I've typed on here. But notes on gas stations. I don't know of an institutional investor. I know that Colonial won't, did several years ago, but just won't now. Gas stations, auto repair shops, funeral homes, dry cleaners, body shops, any place where chemicals are being used, and there would be a risk of having ground contamination that could be very, very costly to mitigate at some point in time. So you've got gas stations, they have tanks in the ground. I know that they're monitored very closely now, but the other thing that I've seen, especially here in Florida, is that you've got a convenience store and gas station, and now they've closed the gas station, but the convenience store is still there and the gas pumps are removed. Well, you can tell that was once a gas station and a convenience store. So anytime there's a possibility of having tanks in the ground, that's going to be a bad deal, because if you buy the loan, then you're the person that if the borrower stops making payments, if you buy the loan, the borrower stops making payments, you're going to be the one that's going to be on the hook. If that borrower stops making payments, you foreclose and now you own the property. So gas stations, auto repair shops have all of these fluids and waste that they have, funeral homes and dry cleaners and body shops as well. And I'll end the call today with just a quick story about something like this. Gosh, it's been about 40 years ago. A gentleman in downtown Orlando had bought a piece of property right there in downtown. They had bought an entire block. And they had a loan for about $6 million on that property with Bank of America. Well, the person that owned it and had the loan, of course, he was paying on the loan, and it was a performing loan. And so he had the property for sale. They got it under contract. And as part of that, since it was a commercial piece of property, and the potential buyer was going to put a high rise on that property, they had to order a class one environmental review. So what they did, or what they do, is they drill down into the soil in several different spots, and they pull up soil samples to see if there's any contamination in the soil. So they did. They found some contamination. So that led to a class two and then a class three, which is a big deal and a very expensive test. And sure enough, it was highly contaminated, the ground, the soil there on that property. And I guess what they found out was that many, many, many years ago, there was a Firestone store there, and there was fuel tanks there. There was oil that, you know, years ago when people changed the oil on their car, they dumped the oil out on the ground and let it leach into the system. And that just kind of continues to move along. And there was lead acid batteries that had been buried on the side, all kind of stuff. The long story short is that the buyer backed out of buying the property because it was going to cost several million dollars to clean it up. More than the $6 million that the borrower owed on the property, obviously. And this was after that super fund or that money that had been designated to clean that up, things like that up, there was no more of that available. So it fell back on the original owner, the borrower of that owed the $6 million to Bank of America. Well, he had a great thought and you know, to himself, and said, look, I'm going to stop paying Bank of America therefore Bank America will foreclose on this. They will own the property, and they will be responsible for cleaning it up. Now, Bank of America, whatever we think of the big banks, they're not really stupid. So Bank of America got wind of what he was trying to do. So what they just did was they just sent him a satisfaction of mortgage, and they took the hit on the $6 million loss, and he got to own the property and free and clear. So he was still responsible for that cleanup there. So again, you know, they may have been born at night, just not last night. So guys, let me see if we have any other questions. Zarina, anything you want to add?
No.
Okay.
Pretty good on that.
You know what? Dave did type in, and he did say that that's not FNAC. Did you mean FNAC, or did you mean...
No, FNAC is FNBA. It's the same.
Okay, FNBA. Okay, so FNAC quoted on that as well. So good. They did a partial on it, though.
Right, because there was a balloon coming up in 2024. The original UPB, well, the UPB at this time was 218, and then in 8 years it would be 189, and they said, we'll quote, you know, 5-6 years on the partial
right. And
buy it.
Okay, very good. Very good. Let us know if that goes through.
At this time it's not. The buyer or the seller opted not to sell, but at least they got a place to go to in the future.
Very good. Okay. Let's see. So Sandra says, so if it's commercial property, buying of note contingent upon clean bill of health. Yeah, but somebody's going to have to pay for that clean bill of health. So Sandra, somebody's going to have to pay for an environmental study. I know that I haven't looked in 5 or 6 years, but a class one, which is the, you know, the easiest one to go through, is going to be a couple $1,000s. So if, it is something like that, really, the seller should provide that as part of their package to sell that, so that a borrower would have that assurance that that would be done. Joe, how about horse stables? That's probably too toxic too. Well, I don't know. You know, horse manure and cow manure. I guess it depends on where you are and how that gets into the watershed. So maybe. Maybe, I don't know. And Lisa says, don't forget tattoo parlors. So, yep, that could be another one as well. So, guys, I promise you that in the note business, it is always going to be very, very interesting. So, just keep studying and go ahead. Lisa says, but nothing in Flint, Michigan. Well, Lisa, from what I've heard, all they need is $55 million in Flint, Michigan to clean that up and to redo the system. So maybe they'll find that. And Dave did type in, same with junkyards. Absolutely. Junkyards are scrapyards. They can be very profitable, but when they're, I know that years past, they didn't have to take the lead acid batteries out of the car. They didn't take the engine oil out of the engines on the car. So when they crushed those, it just simply ran into the ground. And so very careful. And you know, also one thing that can go along with that as well, as long as we're talking about this, is if you're buying a piece of property or the note may be in proximity to a landfill that was done years ago. They line all of the landfills now with a liner so that the contaminants can't leach out of that lining. But years ago, all landfills were not lined either. So guys, that's it. That's all we have. Zarina, nothing else from you today?
Nope, I was just peeping in.
Very good. Well, thanks for checking in on us. Guys, thanks so much. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to get all your content in. Make sure that you get your content in early enough. If you've got something for the Monday call, make sure and get it in Monday morning. Get it in. Give everybody a lead on that of several hours, because we are getting tons and tons and tons of content at this point, and we want to get it all on the syllabus for each call. Everybody have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. Stay warm, and goodbye.